Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Welcome to the advanced class, and today we're going to continue our article on gifted and different. Thanks for joining us today. I hope you all have your magazines and you're listening in as we have this interesting discussion on what we can do to help children who are different or gifted in some way. I'm glad to be with you today and have the people in our classroom who were with us yesterday. Hello, Bill.
Hi, Doris, and hello, listeners. It's great to be here for day two of this parenting article.
And thank you, Linda, for coming along again. This is quite an interesting article and very important for our society today.
It certainly is, and there are a lot of questions and kind of dark areas regarding this topic. So it's great that we're having it in advanced classroom today.
You know, a lot of people feel that their children are gifted, and maybe they aren't, but they have ways of measuring this as far as their intellectual ability. And what is that to measure them?
Yeah, if we look on page 42, Doris, from our reading yesterday, in line 10, 11, and 12, we talked about a teacher recommending that the child, the son of Karen Holloman, be tested for IQ, and that is intelligence quotient.
Okay,
and
so
measure how smart you are.
One of the ways we test for people who we call gifted is the IQ test. Now, that tests for certain kinds of things. Doesn't cover everything, does it, Linda?
No, it's talking about intelligence quotient. You know, we also have EQ, which is emotional quotient. How social are you? How do you, you know, feel about people and make them feel about you? So there are different kinds of.
I wonder what they call people who are musically talented.
Probably MQ.
I don't think they have any MQs. I think we need one for that. Or with their hands. They're skilled in carpentry or making things. Or
right.
There's all kinds of different kinds of things. But intelligence, we usually think, is people who can study well, read books well, do things that take a certain kind of mind activity.
It's one measure of our personality as far as this IQ score. But it is, again, we have to keep in mind it's just one aspect of our personality. Certainly people with a high IQ score are probably going to do well on tests, and they will handle academics very well. They can take in the information and process it much quicker and retain things much better than people with a lower IQ. But again, it is just one aspect of an all-around human being.
Well, they can memorize probably a lot easier, remember things easier.
But I don't know for sure if that always really shows up sometimes because of the boredom factor, you know.
They're bored.
It's so, you know, they know that and why bother?
But we always think about this as far as the school part. They give the IQ test and so forth. But I think we emphasized in our lesson here on page 42 that the parents also have to be aware of that. Of course, all parents think their kids are, you know, gifted in some way. Didn't you think that about your kids?
Of course.
In some ways. Of course.
And they are, of course.
Of course. But, you know, as far as children who have this as very high IQs, they do have a problem adjusting to the standard. And you'll find that sometimes they won't do well in a certain kind of school, but they'll go to another kind and they'll do very well. So it's something that the parents have to be aware of, too.
Yeah, it's just – it's something that if the child is failing in a certain environment, failing to adjust, failing to fit in with the class or the teachers, don't just assume that the child is a failure in life. You have to look at this and say, all right, how do we figure this out? What are our options and what do we need to explore to get this child into the right environment?
Well, sometimes if a child in school finishes their work quickly, what is it the teachers will often do?
Give them more of it.
Yeah, you can
more
do
of the
more.
Same thing.
You're through. But is that the right thing to do?
No, it's not. Because as we see in line 19 and 20 from our reading yesterday, Doris, that right column in page 42, more chapters, more of what didn't hold the child's interest the first time around. So there is this really smart kid sitting there, finished all their work, and the knee-jerk reaction by the teacher, and I used to do this when I taught in the cram schools. I didn't know what else to do, so I would just give them, okay, write these another next 10 or 20 sentences. It was the same thing that bored the kid already. But I was too busy to figure this out.
So all the teachers that do that read line 22. Yeah. What these kids don't need is more work. But what do they need?
Well, they end yesterday's article with they need parents. Okay, so remember, it really starts with parents, with mm-hmm. us, who recognize and respect what their children are interested in and encourage those interests. And mm-hmm. I don't think this does not mean let your child sit at the computer all day long.
No, that's right. Well, we're going to look at page 43 today, and we're going to talk about how we can foster or how we can nurture, develop this kind of fascination. You read in Xi Ying Li. How can we do that? We'll find out about that as we read today the first section of our lesson.
Fostering fascination. Perlstein counseled one family whose son was fascinated by train routes. There are all kinds of things the parents could do to foster that kind of interest, she says. Taking him on rail trips to different parts of the country, helping him learn the physics of trains, reading the history of trains, learning about bullet trains in other countries, and the politics and culture surrounding trains, and how in Europe they can go across borders. Suddenly, you're learning reading, writing, history, geography, science, politics, and culture, all through his area of interest, she says. You push their knowledge to its limits because you're encouraging them to do what's interesting to them. You're also taking responsibility for your child's learning rather than expecting the school to accommodate his unique needs.
Well, I think the example that we have here is quite interesting about this one family whose son was fascinated by train routes. We could say train routes or train routes. Either one of those words is okay. But the way where trains go. And I thought that was a very interesting thing that they decided to do.
Smart parents. So it says here that there are all kinds of things that parents could do to foster or promote the growth or development of that interest. And what these parents did was they took him on rail trips to all over the country, He could actually ride on a train.
That was a very smart thing to do, but they did more than that.
Yeah, they were taking him on these trips to different parts of the country, but then they also took it even further. They were helping him to learn the physics of trains and reading the history of trains.
Are there physics of trains?
Yes, well, it must be.
Yeah, we're talking about, the speed of the trains. How mm-hmm. are these things engineered? How do they run? Mm-hmm. How does this mechanism work?
And how they
so he can
the
understand
yeah.
the train, the inner workings of the trains.
And what else did they do?
The history of trains.
So
I mean,
was
everything,
interesting.
Learning about bullet trains in other countries, and a bullet train is – whenever I hear bullet train, I think of Japan.
I do, too. Cause
or France, mm-hmm. their bullet train to the south. So those really super fast trains in other countries. The politics, how many people think of this, the politics and culture surrounding trains?
And how in Europe they can go across borders and things. Because we wouldn't think of that so much in the States because you go from one state to the other. But in Europe you go very far and you're in another country. So how do the trains do that? So they got him thinking about a lot of things. That was very wise, wasn't it?
It's very inclusive and mm-hmm. Probably even beyond what their son had in mind in the first place. I mean, he probably gobbled up all of this information. So
to gobble it up means to just eat it up fast,
yeah.
Bill, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You don't gobble up your food, though, right? But it says over here in line 13 that you push their knowledge to its limits. So you are helping them. You're leading them, really, but mm-hmm. you're also pushing it. You're giving them more information, but not just say, just study the same thing over and over. You're trying to think of different aspects, different phases that are involved in it. And I think that helps them get a bigger, well-rounded picture, doesn't it?
Well, if you go back up to line 10, it says, all of a sudden, you're involved in reading, writing, history, geography, science, politics, and culture.
Right.
And all in the area of trains, all relating to trains. So, again, that's going to promote his fascination with trains in all aspects of it.
That was a good idea, wasn't it?
Yeah.
instead of breaking them down individually, you know, I'm thinking of, for instance, in math, you know, maybe their son sits in math class and just is bored to death, right? Because he might see these equations up on the board, and it doesn't even mean anything, x, y,
he could probably
squared
solve
plus
them,
all
though,
that, right?
Right?
Doesn't mean anything. But if he can study the physics of the train and study the routes, understand, okay, what's their speed? How fast are they traveling? When are they going to get there? How does this thing work? Then he can take those math equations and tie it into real-world functioning of the train. And then he can actually get excited about the math and the thing he's interested in.
Bill, I think everybody would be more excited that way than seeing those equations.
But I know,
probably,
I would.
Probably the talented kids can do the equations quickly right in their head, where other people have to figure them out. So they're giving them more things to figure out. But what I like part here is the part of the parents is in line 15, where it says you, your parents, you're taking some of the responsibility from your child's learning. You're not expecting the school to do everything to accommodate his unique needs, to accommodate his needs. What does that mean?
Well, it means to change things, you know, or to make it different so that because he is unique or different, to accommodate means to make room for or to change your maybe your lesson plan or what you're going to do to interest this child.
So don't put it all on the school.
Right. Of course, it's your child, you know. And also, I think for parents, you know, we learn to appreciate that about our child and help that child not maybe feel so different already.
What you were also mentioning, I think, yesterday we were talking about it, that the teacher has so many students that she cannot really check fully into this for her class of students, whereas the parents ought to be able to keep track of it closer with their own children, I think.
I thought this was wonderful.
Right. Parents should take more responsibility.
And what this is just time. This is just time, spending time with the child, paying attention to what they are interested in. Taking him on rail trips to different parts of the country. That's at least Saturday and Sunday. That is a weekend right there. That's not just an hour or two and then send them off somewhere.
Right.
This is spending 2 days. And actually, the thing is, this is like the whole family that's involved. This is actually quality time for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So their son's interest actually could be an activity that actually bonds the whole family.
That's true. That's another whole aspect of it. But let's find out what the school's response is as we read on and finish this part of the lesson talking about the school's response.
School response. In some cases, a school that treats its gifted students as similarly as possible to all students is itself a gift, says child and family psychotherapist Fran Walfish. The social stigma is lessened, of course. Sometimes schools teach these kids to be super, super geniuses, but beyond being endowed cognitively and academically, they're socially awkward and limited, Walfish says. You want your child to learn how to interact in the mainstream. And you also want them to learn mainstream life lessons. Sometimes kids get the message when they're labeled gifted and sent to special classes that things will come easily to them, and they'll certainly make it into whatever college they want, Walfish says. Gifted kids need to be prepared to deal with disappointment, too. Finding non-school teachers, piano, karate, and other adults or older kids for your child to bond with can also be very beneficial. According to Pearlstein, mixed-age activities, where they have the opportunity to meet older kids and adults that motivate them, can be really important.
Okay, so it talks about the school's response here.
Right. So we're talking about a school that treats its gifted students as similarly as possible to all its students is a gift for the child itself.
Hmm.
Because most kids, they don't want to stand out.
No. Well, they don't want to be different.
Right.
Anyway.
They don't want to be different.
Although you have heard of these kids who are geniuses who are actually in college when they're 12 or something. And sometimes, I don't know how that works out, but they have a little hard time socially.
Right. And actually, it says, I've read some things about it, which is quite striking. A lot of the kids that go to university early and are geniuses, really in their adult life, it all levels out. It doesn't continue for some reason.
Yeah, I have read the same thing, that they peak early. Mm-hmm. A lot of them peak early. They're getting PhDs by the time they're 16 or 18. But the problem is there's like this lack of satisfaction later on around age 30 or 35.
Well, when I've read those articles, I wonder if it's because maybe they're not taken so seriously by other people in their field at such an early age. You know
maybe.
What I mean? I mean, sometimes you need to continue to be fostered your whole life in order to develop in certain areas. If you're peaking at 18 and you're working with, 35 and 40-year-olds, they might feel either threatened or they might not take you seriously.
Well, anyway, we'll let the psychotherapists work on that part of it.
Yeah.
But the idea of the social stigma. Now, nobody likes a social stigma. A stigma is what?
That's when people disapprove of something, and especially when it is unfair. So,
well, it's not only disapproving, but it makes you stand out in some way that they could make fun of you. Not just disapprove of you, but they say, well, you're black, you're white, you're Asian, whatever it is. That's a stigma. Your nationality can be a stigma. Mm-hmm. Or you're rich or you're poor can be a stigma. Or you're smart and you're not smart. There's a lot of things that can cause a stigma, not just this. Isn't that true?
That's true. So all of those go together. And what they're saying here is, and sometimes kids that are super smart don't really relate as, socially.
Right.
Like we
are
like,
super dumb. Same thing.
Well, yeah.
Kids really, they can't make it.
Right.
Actually, they have a hard time, too. They call them sometimes. So you're supposed to be just like everybody else in school. The clothes you wear, the things you do, everything. And if you're a little bit different, you could have that kind of a stigma.
Right. And the social issue that brings out, which is another topic, is bullying sometimes, too.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But the stigma here is lessened. Kids are treated more evenly.
Yeah, right. Just part of the crowd. It actually helps them. It's a balance here. You want to challenge them, but at the same time, you want them to be part of the crowd. We have another quote here from this psychotherapist, Fran Walfish. Sometimes schools teach these kids to be super, super geniuses.
Mm-hmm.
So that on one side, maybe they are doing the academic things. They are giving them – maybe they have advanced courses – or they can tailor things for them to take care of that genius, to foster that. But beyond being endowed cognitively and academically, they're socially awkward and limited. First, let me go back to this endowed cognitively. So endowed is meaning to possess, have a lot of something, especially money or possessions, or in this case, skills, talents, ability. He's endowed with the ability, musical ability. He's endowed with
things. Well, stop there for a minute on this cognitively and academically, those two words.
Yeah.
Well, those are big words.
Well, cognitively means just through our knowledge, our conscious knowledge of things, being aware of things and also taking in information and processing it quickly.
So that means your ability to relate and work with others as well as what you know academically?
No. This is talking about I'm really good. If I'm endowed cognitively, I can pick up a book and read it in an hour, and I can remember everything. I can take a test and score 100.
Okay.
I might get on a computer and zip right through everything.
Now, what's that different than academically?
That has to do with your brain ability.
Yeah.
Right.
Because we want to get those two words separated there.
Right. And academically is how you really use it.
Yeah. So I can have the ability to process it quickly, and then academically, all right, what am I going to do with this? And I can score well on tests. I can write reports.
Okay.
I can do well, get great grades.
Okay. That might happen, yeah. But then what else happens?
But after the comma, here's the but, right, Linda?
Mm-hmm. They're socially awkward and limited, which means that they don't relate well, mm-hmm. Or they don't really know how to talk, what we consider normally to children because they're in a different world.
So it says that you really want your child to learn how to interact in the mainstream. And I know some teachers have done things like when a child is quite good or they're learning quickly, they'll say, now you take this group, they have little groups, and they know those who are a little better, and they'll work together with that group to be a teacher's assistant. And they can do other things to use those students. I've seen teachers do that, and that's quite a good thing to do too, isn't
it? Right. When I was looking into this subject, actually. They talk about making groups of varying levels of ability, mm-hmm. you know, so you can learn from one another. And this kind of child, you know, has a lot to offer.
And that will help them to be more socially acceptable if they're being a helper to the other kids. Mm-hmm. That'll help them.
I know we're talking about gifted and different here, so I think we need to remind our listening audience that this really is this particular kind of child. Every child, to me, is gifted.
Right.
You know,
we're gifted in some ways. This means high IQs right here.
Right. We're talking particularly about that.
But then you also want them to learn what they call the mainstream life lessons, to get along with others, to relate to others, to be patient, to be all these kind of things that have to do with your mainstream getting along with people, right?
Yes, yeah. I totally agree.
Yeah, we continue with a quote there from the psychotherapist Fran Walfish. Sometimes kids get the message when they're labeled gifted and sent to special classes that things will come easily to them. I'm going to stop right there. So that's one of the problems with it is they're able to solve problems so quickly, take in the information, process it. After a while, they start to think, this is really easy, you know.
Well, it probably is.
Yeah.
Right.
But, you know, that's not one of life's lessons, you know. It also goes on to say that these kids have to learn to deal with disappointment because academically things come easily. You know, that doesn't mean it's going to be true across the board or with every area of their lives.
So don't put everything on the school and try to have them, when they're in school, be treated like everybody else, but find outside things like non-school teachers, which means what?
Well, there could be, you know, lessons outside. We see piano and karate there in parentheses. Any other activity, and then also other adults or older kids for the child to bond with, that can also be helpful.
I just want to remind us all that this is only an example, that we have to be aware of what our children are interested in. If my kid is not at all interested in piano, there's no reason to force them to do that. So they're just giving you a wide range of things.
But things they're interested in.
Right.
But I think this last part here that says mixed age activities mm-hmm. where they can meet older kids and adults also that can motivate them. So they don't just stay with their own peers, their own age. They can go with other people too. But you have this problem, like we said at the beginning, of the families. There could be this sibling, which is your own family. The two boys were ordinary and the younger one was smart. We found that out, was extraordinarily gifted in the beginning. Remember that?
Oh, right. Yes, yeah. Yes.
Well, the sibling rivalry could be a problem because when a child is labeled this and they say, oh, you are, you know, high IQ or something, or your special needs or whatever it is, then what happens then?
Well, it says here that you have to be careful. If a child has this label, then you have to be careful that it says sibling relationships don't take a hit. That means that there is not jealousy. You know, a lot of jealousy.
And you can be proud of your brother and all, but you don't have to, you know, be jealous of him.
Right.
You know, that's the kind of thing parents have to work at this. So you have to talk about things with the kids and get them to understand that we're all different in some ways. And I think the parents have a lot to do with that. But we do have a skit to finish yesterday's. We didn't find out what happened.
That's right. It concludes yesterday's exciting feature.
So, Joshua, did you speak with the nursery school headmaster today about our son, Davy?
I did, Wendy. And I have some fascinating news.
I hope it's good. I'm worried that our son's lack of interest and misbehavior in the classroom may lead to more problems down the road.
Mrs. Krabappel, the headmaster, had Davy tested for his IQ.
Oh, no. Is it too low? Is that why he's struggling?
Just the opposite. Wendy, it's too high!
Too high? How can IQ be too high? I thought a high IQ would be a good thing.
Actually, extremely high IQ people are fraught with difficulty.
I've never had that problem before.
I know. It's not something you have to worry about. But our son, Davy, does.
Is there some sort of stigma associated with being too smart? I don't want our son to stand out. I want him to be normal, average, just fit in.
It's too late for that, Wendy. Our son is well endowed with extreme intelligence.
It sounds like we may need to use unconventional methods to educate him and keep him interested in learning.
Mrs. Krabappel had some great suggestions for this.
Such as?
Enrolling him in Harvard Medical School.
Our son is 4 years old.
But you always wanted him to be a doctor, right?
Yes, you're right. Okay, Harvard Medical School it is. We'll tell him at dinner.
Sounds like a great plan. Wow, that was certainly exciting. Hey, Doris, before we sign off, I want to go back to this line 19 and 20 on page 43, the right column, talking about things that will come easily to them. They'll make it into whatever college they want. What happens is, of course, the gifted child will be at the head of the class all the time and succeeding. But one of these life lessons that they need to learn is losing. There will come a time we all lose in life. And you have to really know how to deal with this. And parents need to teach their kids how to deal with coming in second place, coming in 10th place, so that it does not become a devastating emotional event. And so that's one of those life lessons. So,
Bill, you can play a game with them at home and don't let them win all the time, right?
You might not be able to help it.
Well, you might not be able to do that.
But you know what I mean? Some people are afraid to let, but that's good, doing family things together, and some kids are better at some things than others, so
that's
you can
right.
do that too.
I think as parents we need to recognize that do I sound like a broken record? I think as parents we need to see that each of our children is special and gifted, you know?
Right.
And if you do have a gifted child, please, even if you don't, read this this little paragraph we didn't get a chance to totally talk about on sibling rivalry, because we tend to lavish a lot of attention on this child to try to, you know, meet their needs. Meanwhile, our other children are being what they feel neglected. So we need to be very careful.
So not only read it yourself, pass it on to your friends, talk about it with them. And even if you don't have children yourself, like some of us, we can still share it with our friends who do. So that's the importance of our Advanced magazine, is to share what we learn with others round about us. So share it with other people today, and we'll see you next time when we begin next month's lesson. So say goodbye to everyone.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.